Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 2 of the Comic Timing Extra Point. It's been a few weeks since I recorded the last Extra Point, and there will be no music in this one because I am doing this straight through while I'm at work, which is actually one of the reasons why I'm recording this to begin with, because my work schedule has been very night-heavy the past couple of weeks, so Brent and I haven't really had a chance to record. You know, which kind of sucks. But I'm not going to leave you guys without a little bit of comic timing action here and there. So here I am. And I'm going to start things off with a response. Mr. Peter Rios had his second podcasting episode on podcasting, as he likes to call it. I believe that was 2 episodes back. Today is the 27th of March. So I believe that was Monday's show, if memory serves. And he got a question from one of his listeners about recording panels at podcasts. And he said, well, maybe Ian Levenstein would have a little bit to add on that. And hey, that's my name. So I will add a little bit on that. Usually when I record a panel, and it's not just because I'm vain, because, well, I don't think that's the reason. It's usually a panel that I myself am running, because it's just easier that way. You know, if I say something that is going to damn me, then at least I said it. You know, it's hard to really renege on the fact that that I'm the one who's speaking. So, you know, I don't watch what I say in particular, but if I have my recorder with me and I think it's something that is going to wind up released in one way or the other, I'll hit record and I'll do the panel. And then I will release said episode. At last year's Super Show, we were lucky enough to hook in directly to the mixer, and we had a clean recording of the podcasting panel, which was pretty damn cool. And that's my preferred method now. Like, I would totally prefer having a mixer recording of a podcast whenever possible, because then you're not worrying about crowd noise nearly as much, and you're not worrying about how is this going to wind up sounding. Is every single person in the panel going to be audible? You're just directly into the mixer, so whatever a mic sounds like is what your recording is going to sound like, which is the best way to go about it. But if you do not have that option, grab yourself your Zoom H2, hold it up, do a 2-channel recording that is front and back, microphone active, and you'll be able to get both the actual in front of you panel and in back of you when they ask questions. You could still do a front microphone recording if you really want to. You just have to move it a lot more, and that's a little bit more frustrating. I mean, that's why I have the Zoom H2, is because it has those 4 microphones built in, and it makes life so much easier when you're doing interviews. And the same would be said for a recording at a convention, or a panel, or stuff like that. Now, asking permission for panels that you yourself are not running, that's a little trickier. If you think that it's somebody who is very approachable and friendly, then go ahead and ask them. You can ask them even after the panel. Say, look, I have a recording of this particular panel. Would you mind if I put it up? In fact, actually, that's the preferred method, just because they've already said everything. So if they think that there's something that was said in this panel that might not reflect well on them, they can easily say, you know what, I'd rather you not put that up. Or if you do put it up, take this particular portion out, edit it out, and I would be greatly appreciated. And then you say thank you, and then you listen to what they said, because, well, you know, stay in the good graces of people. The few times that I've put up panels that I'm not on, it has been people that I've already been familiar with. Like, for instance, when Raging Bullets had their Gail Simone spotlight panel at New York Comic Con a few years back, I brought my recorder with me, and I recorded the panel, because I knew that there wasn't a way to really get the audio out there, and I figured Sean and Jim would be appreciative, and they were, and they put it out as an episode, and Gail was more than happy to spread the love because, well, again, Gail is a fan of fans, and she didn't say anything damning in the panel itself, and it was actually a very interesting and well-done panel. So, of course, that's what you do. So yeah, it's tricky, but I would 100% say get the permission of a panelist, of panelists, before you put anything up, just to be on the safe side, to ensure that you're not going to wind up pissing somebody off in the end. Because really, what's the point of putting out a show if you're going to lose a potential contact later down the road? You know, it's good to stay on the right side of the road, if you know what I mean. So that's out of the way. Let me talk about the two things that I actually wanted to discuss on the episode to begin with. Number one, today is Wednesday, and I got back from PAX East a few days ago. And the entire reason I'm recording this today and not 2 days ago is because my voice sounded like this. Yeah, a whole lot of gamers and went to the concerts, so there was a whole lot of screaming going on. And finally had my voice back for the most part after a few days. PAX East was amazing. A lot of folks have been talking about FableCon, and sadly that was the same weekend as PAX East, so I was unable to attend that. Might try and do it next year, although the whole getting to the middle of nowhere Minnesota is the hard part of that. But for me, PAX East is a bus ride away. And on Thursday, me, my girlfriend, and a friend of ours hopped on the Megabus and rode up to Boston. And we were there from Thursday until Sunday night. We took Megabus there and cheap-ass Chinatown bus back. We made record time on the way back, 3.5 hours from Boston to New York. It's actually not technically record time for us because we once made it back in 3 hours and like 15 minutes or 3 hours and 20 minutes, which was freaking amazing. But you're not here to hear about my travel. You're here to hear about the actual convention. So I oblige. What PAX East does that a lot of other conventions do not is that it is 100% approachable. The enforcers, and they're called enforcers because, well, this is Penny Arcade. They like having names for things, and they like being silly about it. But the enforcers are the con staff, and they're all volunteers. A lot of them have been doing PAX Prime for years and now have made their way over to PAX East, and there's some folks that are just starting out with PAX East that did not do PAX Prime before. You can usually tell a veteran by who's wearing a utility kilt. If they're wearing a kilt, they're from PAX Prime, more than likely. But they are the friendliest, happiest people that I have ever had to deal with at a convention. If you have any questions whatsoever, or any concerns, or any complaints, or any criticisms, you go up to an enforcer, you let them know, and you will be handled with dignity. Which is great, really, because I've had some pretty shitty situations at cons that were not handled well in the past, and you will never get that from PAX East. Everyone's happy there, and the attendees themselves. You want to start off a conversation with somebody in line, chances are you're going to be able to do that because you're all there for the same reason. You enjoy games, whether it be board games, whether it be video games, whether it be card games, whether it be games involving PlayStation Move controllers, which I'll get to. You're just there to have a good time and enjoy yourself. And that is 100%, 150%, 250% what I found this year. First year at PAX East, I wasn't able to go to because it was Super Show weekend. Since then, I've been going, and I think I'm going to do my best to make it to every single one from now on just because it's that good. On Friday, we really did mostly shopping and checking out the con floor. Got myself some PAX East swag, both t-shirts. They put out with a variant shirt that looks a lot like an old school, I guess closer to an Atari box art for the PAX shirt. And then there was the standard black shirt with the PAX East logo. Got that. Also picked up a scarf because that's something that they do. And, well, I don't actually own a scarf, but you know what? Now I do. And I'm sure it would look good on me because I'm a pretty man. All right, I'll take it back. Next, this was the first year that they did pin trading. Now, for anybody who's been to a Disney park, whether it be Disney World or Disneyland or anything like that, is probably pretty familiar with pin trading. What it is you buy a set of pins or one pin in particular. And if you don't like that pin or you find a pin that you like better, you find someone who's willing to trade and you trade them a pin for a pin. And that's the way it goes. And that's what they were doing this year at PAX East for the first time. And it went off so well that they're going to be doing it at PAX Australia. They're going to be doing it at PAX Prime. And more than likely, you'll probably be seeing it at things like E3 just because of how well this went off. There was one special pin that you could get by going to the Magic the Gathering booth, which we did on Sunday, which was Steve Katz, who's been on Super Show before, Super Show recordings, that is, of Comic Geek Speak before. And Chris and myself went online and checked out the Magic the Gathering demo that they were doing. And if you were to do the demo, this is for the new online, well, I'm not even sure if it's online. It's just the Windows version and iPad version of Magic the Gathering. So instead of having physical cards, you're playing a game on your computer. And we went and did that and got a Chandra pin in response, which is pretty cool. And we wound up with every pin, at least all the special pins. We got the PAX East set. We didn't get the starter set. And we also got the merch pin for buying $90 or more. Yeah, we combined purchases, me and Chris. I don't really get that. So, you know, it's not like I sat there spending $90, although I'm sure in the end I probably did. And while I was roaming the floor, I got myself this really cool We Love Fine shirt. WeLoveFine.com is the website that I've been trying to get for a few cons now. For $25, they had this very awesome Avengers shirt where the Avengers are in the shape of the Avengers A. So you've got Hulk, Captain America, Iron Man, and pretty sure Giant Man's on there too. And they're forming the A insignia that I'm sure we're all very familiar with. It's very pretty. I was glad to have gotten that. Got myself a BMO Mimo. Mimo is a Mimo bot. That is a USB stick or USB key or whatever you want to call it that is in the shape of a popular character. Like, I already own a Flash, which I'm glad exists, shaped like the Flash. Of course, it's Wally West because I say so. And this one is BMO, 16 gigabytes for a cool $28. Well worth the purchase. And that's really all the purchases that I can think of. We went to Weagle Seafood, had a good dinner there on Friday, and Saturday we just stayed at the con, and Sunday we stayed at the con too. But some of the stuff I saw on the floor was really cool. One thing in particular, there's a game that is coming out that's based on a meme, based on a fighting game meme. This game is called Dropkick, where you only have two buttons. That's it. You have a jump button and a dropkick button. And whoever lands the first dropkick, bam, the other guy's dead. That's it. It's the only move in the game. And you can charge up your dropkick meter to do a special dropkick move, where I believe you press both buttons at the same time to activate it. It's the silliest game in the world, but kind of looks fun. I'd definitely play it at least once or twice. Let's see, what else did I see there? I saw a soda simulator. I'm telling you all the weird stuff. It's a game where you actually simulate drinking soda. So you can drink a cup of soda inside of a mouth, or you can drink a cup of soda inside of a whale, or you can drink a cup of soda on Mars, and all these other weird levels. And my friend checked that one out. I didn't actually do it, but he seemed to have fun with it, so that was nice. And yeah, really, there was a whole bunch of stuff on the floor. One of the things about PAX East, at least the way that I do it, is I don't really focus too much on playing games as much as I am getting the experience in. So we went to as many of the booths as we could on the floor and just checked out what they had to offer. And we managed to hit a decent amount. Of course, along the way, we saw a lot of good cosplay. Like, for instance, there was actually an Iron Patriot on the floor. And I asked him straight up, are you Norman Osborn or Rhodey? And he said, oh, Rhodey. Or I believe his exact words were, I'm not Norman Osborn. And I wonder whether or not he actually knows that Norman Osborn was the Iron Patriot. Or if he's just a fan of the Iron Man movies, which is fine. It's just, you know, it's weird to experience that. Like, Iron Man 3 is not even out yet, and people are already dressing as the Iron Patriot as Rhodey. Well, eh, c'est la vie. I saw a good Brock from the Venture Brothers on the floor, and saw a Ice Princess from Adventure Time, and a whole bunch of other good stuff. But the probably the and apologies for the honking train in the background there. My work is right near Penn Station, so you're bound to hear that every now and then. We actually got to play a game called Johann Sebastian Joust. Now, anybody who's not familiar with Johann Sebastian Joust, it is a game where you're holding a PlayStation Move controller, and it's synced via Bluetooth with a MacBook. And depending on how fast the music goes that's coming out of the MacBook is how fast you yourself can move. And the object is that you're keeping the Move controller as steady as possible while this is happening. If you move the Move controller, if you shake it too much, you're out. But when the music gets slower, you have to walk slower. When the music gets faster, you have to move faster. And there's, you know, I think you can play up to 8 people in the standard game of Joust. And it's a hell of a lot of fun. We were playing it in one of the sides of the hall. And eventually, we actually wound up in the room that was unused that we wound up playing the game in for a while there. And there is also a variation where you play it in the dark. Ooh. And there's a team version of Joust. There's a version where one person is the mole, and you got to determine which member of the team is the mole and avoid him at all costs, and a whole bunch of other things. It's so much fun. Once you start playing it, you're not going to stop. So if you have PlayStation Move controllers, if you have at least, hell, I'd even say 4 of them, which means that you probably either really like PlayStation 3 or you just happen to buy things randomly, use it with your MacBook and play Johann Sebastian Joust. If not, then there's actually a Twitter feed, and I'll probably have it in the show notes, where you can find out where a Joust game is happening near you, and you can then approach that. Like we've played it at a street fair once. It was actually a street fair for kids, which means it was one of the few instances where you could kick a kid in the ass. Hasn't everybody wanted to do that at least once in their life? So other than roaming the floor and buying stuff, there were other things that I wound up doing while at PAX, such as the Parents as Characters panel, which took place on Friday at 5:30. What's sort of been happening in games lately is, you remember how the parent character was usually that dude you would see once when you're off about to do your adventure, like how in Pokemon you see your mom and unless she's giving you money, you never see her again? Or, it's dangerous to go alone. Here, take this. Well, these days, with games like Walking Dead, you're seeing parents a lot more than you used to. Persona 4 would be another example that they brought up. And one of the other ones as well, Heavy Rain, where the kid dies early on, spoilers, and you wind up seeing it through the eyes of the parent, which is pretty important there. Susan Arendt, and I always get her name wrong, of The Escapist, was the moderator, and Brian Crescente of Polygon, formerly of Kotaku, was there as well. And we also had Ben Kachera of the Penny Arcade Report and Mike Ludlow of BioWare on the panel, and it was really well done. I feel like I learned a lot at this panel, which, as I talked about in episode 1, is something that I like to do at the panels that I go to, is actually learn stuff. We also did the Omegathon rounds. The Omegathon is a tournament that goes on throughout the course of PAX weekend, and it starts off with round 1, where there are 16 people competing, and they're teams of 2. At least in PAX East, they're teams of 2. So you're going to get rid of folks pretty easily there once we get down to it. But round 1 this year was Bomberman. So the whoever wound up blowing up the most spaces and getting them in their color was the victor. Round 2 was NBA Jam on Fire Edition, which was good except for a couple of slaughters here and there in some of the other games, but that's bound to happen, so not too much out of the realm of possibility. Then round three was the return of Jenga. 2 years ago, they did Jenga on the stage for round three, and it was Mega Jenga, which were giant blocks, as opposed to the small-ass Jenga that you would see on sitting on top of a table. These were made out of actual 2x4s. Yeah. And this time, to up the ante, people were handcuffed to each other. So you had to work with your teammate, and literally, you were one arm short and one leg short. And that was what you had to get through. And then round four, the final round, was a game called Space Team, which is available on iOS. It's a two-player or more game. And what's the point of the game is that the ship will fly itself, but you have to work together as a space team to stop the ship from collapsing in on itself, from crashing. Which is all well and good if the game had actually worked. Yeah, due to the amount of wavelengths that were probably competing at the convention center and in the room itself, they couldn't get their Wi-Fi working, and you need Wi-Fi in order to play it. So yeah, that didn't wind up working too great, so they wound up crowning four winners of the Omegathon this year instead of two. They gave both groups of finalists the trip to Germany for GamesCon, which was very nice of them. The other panels that we went to, in fact, actually, the only other panels we went to were concerts, now that I think about it. On Friday, we saw Video Games Orchestra, and they are always good. One of my favorite acts to see at PAX is Video Game Orchestra, just because they put on such a nice show. It's good times. And then the second act was Those Who Fight, which were kind of laughable. They were a Final Fantasy rock opera that was along the lines of Repo the Genetic Opera. And if you've ever seen Repo the Genetic Opera, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It was over the top and it was trying too hard to be Rocky Horror Picture Show and just sort of failed miserably. It was just bad. I mean, it was funny, but I wasn't there to see funny. I was there to see good. So yeah, we stayed for those two and then left because Proto Men has never really been my thing, and they were the third act. We did go to see after that, and I almost forgot, Family Feud. They did a video game version of Family Feud, and that was very well done with a Windows version of Family Feud that they were able to pull off nicely. And then on Saturday, we saw Sam Hart, who was first up at the concert, and he was all right. I mean, he wasn't anything to write home about. We then left for MC Frontalot because, yet again, MC Frontalot, not really my thing. While MC Frontalot was going on, they were streaming the entire concert on Twitch TV. So I just had the stream going on my Samsung Galaxy 8.9 while we went to try out Zombie U downstairs. And Zombie U is a complicated game. It's not really too usable using Wiimotes. You got to use that new Wii U controller, which is all well and good, but it's still sort of above my realm. So once the front lot was done, we went back, and then Jonathan Colton and Paul and Storm closed out the night, and they were as fun as they ever are. The concerts are 100% worth going to at PAX East, and you can, you know, mix and match which ones you go to. And it's easy enough to do that, as usually the room doesn't entirely fill up. And if it does, they wait for people to leave, and then you can go back in. Like, when Video Games Orchestra was on, I wound up heading back to the room to pick something up and went away from my group for a little bit, and I had to wait about 5-10 minutes to get into the concert once they cleared people out. But they did clear people out, and then I went upstairs, and all was well with the world. So yeah, PAX East was great, and if you haven't gone, do yourself a favor and go next year. It sells out quickly, but as long as you are paying attention and following them on Twitter, you should be able to find it and get your 3-day pass before they're all gone. We were staying at the Renaissance Hotel, which is right down the block, and so even though it was a little chilly, it was still in the mid-40s, late 30s, temperature-wise, we were able to keep the coats back up in the room and just bring a sweatshirt and tough it out that way and walk the 4 or 5 blocks, and everything else was great. What's also fantastic is that because Boston is such a small city, we were able to walk from South Station to the convention center. It's about a 10-15 minute walk. So it's much better than waiting for the silver line and getting your way out there. But you could do that if you have too many bags on you. But we did not, so we did not. Got one more thing I want to talk about on this episode. And right now, it is Passover. And for those of you who do not know, I am Jewish. Always have been, probably only always will be, unless something weird happens. I'm not really a practicing Jew, but I do like to, partake in the festivities every now and then, and I'll enjoy myself a matzah cracker. Yummy, yummy, yummy. So I was thinking, because it's Passover, what comic books am I going to pass over this year? What comics am I going to just either give up cold turkey or just not even try, even if people tell me that it's good? Well, I'm thinking of a couple off the top of my head, and I'm going to list them now. Number one, Secret Avengers by Nick Spencer. Now, it's not that I didn't enjoy the previous version of Secret Avengers, because I did. I thought that Rick Remender did a wonderful job on it. Nick Spencer, for the short time he was on it, did a pretty good job. And Warren Ellis' issues were great, and so were Brubaker's, to start it off with. It's just that the way the series ended, I feel like I do not need a fresh take on Secret Avengers anytime soon. Maybe I'll pick it up in trade sometime down the road, but right now, no, not for me. I can just skip it, and I'll feel perfectly happy. Number two, and this is a definite, Action Comics. Because I wasn't really even enjoying it near the end there. I have about 6 or 7 issues of Grant Morrison's Action Comics waiting to be read still. And it used to be a top-of-the-stack book for me. It's not anymore. I just don't know what it is. Maybe it's just my appreciation for DC in general has gone downhill. But yeah, I'm not going to do it. Especially with what happened with Andy Diggle, how he's on for, what, 1.5 issues or 1 full issue, and that's the end of it? It just doesn't work for me. I'm not caring. I mean, yeah, Tony Daniel is a cool dude and his art's nice, but he's just thrown into this. I'm not even sure if he even knew he was taking over the book. Number three, the Green Lantern titles. Geoff Johns is leaving, so what does that say? That means I can break with a clean break. And that is exactly what I am doing. Even though I am a fan of Kyle Rayner, I will not pick up New Guardians after this. Even though I am a fan of Jon Stewart and do not want him dead, I am not going to pick up Green Lantern Corps, and I'm not going to pick up Green Lantern either. It's yet again a situation there where maybe a year or two down the road I'll pick up the trades, but I'm just not interested enough to give this a shot. So that's going to be passed over for me. Looking back even further here, I am about an issue away, maybe 2 issues away, from passing over Justice League, because it's yet again another one of those books that's okay. It's not great, which is weird. It's very weird to me to say that, because it's Justice League, you know, and it's Geoff Johns and Jim Lee. I know Jim Lee's going elsewhere, but it's just not something that's intrigue. It's been intriguing to me enough the past couple of issues, and I've got a back pile and. Whenever I have a back pile of something, it says to me, hey, Ian, why are you still reading that? So yeah, that's what I'm wondering right now. Why am I still reading that? And it's a very good question, and one that will have to be answered in the next couple of issues, I guess, for me. So I figured out what the other book I'm passing over is, and this is a mini-series, so I don't even know if it really counts, but Alpha, big time. The Alpha character, decent enough idea, but it feels like they sort of tried to shoehorn him in as something important by giving him these alpha powers. You know, there's never been an alpha level character in the Marvel U before. Oh no. And now he's got the lesser powers and everything. And those issues of Spider-Man were just sort of okay. So I don't see myself going back to Alpha. I mean, maybe if the miniseries is collected and people scream, "Hey, dude, run on back," I'll give it a go. But probably not. Going to Marvel one more time here. Thor, actually. Which is funny because people have been raving about it, but there's something about the character of Thor that's never entirely clicked with me, and it might just be the god aspect of it. Like, yeah, Jason Aaron is a damn good writer, and I love his Wolverine and the X-Men, but I didn't read Matt Fraction's run of Thor, even though I bought a bunch of issues of it. It's because I just couldn't bring up the will to do so. JMS's run was good, but it's just, it's not a character that's, that does it for me, so I'm going to skip it for now. I'm going to pass over that like a mofo, and perhaps revisit it sometime soon. I think that is about it. That about covers it. We'll hopefully be back next week with a new episode. I'm probably going to get together with Brent on Saturday to record an episode about the current state of DC Comics. I'll probably work in some Comixology stuff there, too. About whether or not Comixology's failure a couple weeks back might lead to a new generation of digital comics, one not dependent on a company like Comixology. We'll see about that. But yet again, we're sponsored, yet again, I haven't said it this episode, we're sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. Check them out at dcbservice.com and use the promo code CT8 to get an additional 8% off on your first order. We thank them for their sponsorship, and we use them. So be like us and use them. Our email address is comictiming@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/comictiming. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. So that's it for now. As always, there's always time for comics.